This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ormsby stared in disbelief when the three Chinese children burst through the front door again, barely an hour after he had evicted the whole lot of them. "What on God's green earth?" Ormsby bellowed, storming across the lobby to intercept the children. Before he could reach them, he suddenly caught sight of Lord Rupert Cawthorpe Cavendish Gore ushering the Chinese woman into the lobby, seemingly in the midst of conducting a tour. "And my grandfather brought over René Lalique in 1918 to do the glass murals you see here in the Great Hall. Needless to say, Le Chien's, who supervised the restoration, did not approve of these Art Nouveau flourishes." The woman laughed politely.
All right, so before we begin, if I could just get you very quickly to just introduce yourself and what you do. Hello, my name is, and the like.
Hi, my name is Kevin Kwan, and I am the author of Crazy Rich Asians.
Hotel manager. Ah, Wormsby, isn't it? "Yes, my lord," he said, too dazed to correct his boss. "Would you kindly have some rooms readied for the lovely Mrs. Young, Mrs. Leung, and Mrs. Chang?"
You're listening to Bookmark with me, Uma Paganampake Pagan, and this is Authored, a brand new show in which I have these conversations with writers that are built around themes. This season, I'm speaking to them about their first literary loves, their first characters, their first rejections, about the first time they knew they were going to be published.
Ormsby stared at him in utter disbelief. "My lord, surely there's some mistake?" "No, no mistake at all. I sold the Cawthorpe a short while ago, lock, stock, and barrel. May I present the new mistress, Mrs. Felicity Leung?"
"Felicity, isn't there something you wanted to tell this man?"
Felicity turned to Ormsby, now looking as if he was about to faint. "Oh, yes, I almost forgot," she began with a smile. "I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave the premises."
So, Kevin, if you could very quickly just tell people in a nutshell what Crazy Rich Asians is about.
Crazy Rich Asians is a novel. It's a satire of a Singaporean family that's, you know, very, very wealthy, and all the drama and hilarity and comedy that ensues when the heir to this fortune in Singapore brings home his American-born Chinese girlfriend for the wedding of the year in Singapore. And of course, no one approves of this American-born Chinese girlfriend, and lots of things happen. But it's a family story. It's a family saga of this crazy rich family.
So I suppose the question I'm going to have to lead with is, what was the first episode of Bold and the Beautiful that you ever saw?
I've actually never seen Bold and the Beautiful, believe it or not.
What? Because I reading your book, I mean, it harks back to a lot of the stuff I guess I saw growing up as a kid, whether it was in Tamil movies or Chinese soap operas.
I watched quite a few Chinese soap operas as a kid, you know. I remember one in particular called Yesterday's Glitter. You know, this would have been the early 80s in Singapore. That was about a rich Chinese family, I think, during the 1930s. So that left an impression on me.
And were those very important sources of inspiration for the people featured in the book? Because while I've met people who are like that, I guess the highly fictionalized versions that you write require a bit more drama, yeah?
Yeah, they do. But, you know, the drama isn't so far from reality. I mean, a lot of the characters that I write about are really inspired by people that I've actually met. In fact, people they met are probably even crazier and more extreme than the characters in my book. I had to tone things down to make them more believable for the book.
So who then was the first real crazy rich Asian that you met?
You know, I grew up at a time in Singapore, I think, you know, surrounded by a lot of privileged old money families. It was a much more quiet sort of wealth. So I didn't realize that most of the people around me were actually part of the sort of quote-unquote the rich crowd. But I remember one day being taken to, you know, to meet some family friends at their house, and it was the home of a tycoon that was very flamboyant. And, you know, I think a lot of what I remembered of his estate has come out also in the book, inspiring the book, you know, from the number of Rolls Royces and the guard dogs and just the way the house was designed. It was almost like out of James Bond.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, when I read your book as well, I think living in this part of the world, we do have a little bit of exposure to that kind of flamboyance and wealth. But what was it like speaking to, I guess, American audiences who might have read your book and this level of believability that you were trying to impart? Did people get it right away, or were they like, no, this is just crazy fiction?
I think they really got it right away, especially in the U.S. in the last, you know, 5 years. There has been so much attention on Asia and Asian wealth, and you do see it, especially in the larger cities like New York and L.A. The only people that are shopping and who are spending real money these days are Asians. You know, so I think there's been a lot of curiosity by the Western media, by Americans in general, to ask, who are these people, you know, that are buying up all this real estate, that are in all the shops in Beverly Hills and Rodeo Drive, buying up, you know, all the clothing and the jewelry and things like that. So I think there has become a familiarity with this. So they were very curious to read about the origin stories of these families. You know, how did these families get so rich? And yeah, I think there was also a surprise element for some people, you know, who were less exposed to this, who were just sort of amazed that there was this culture of old money that's been in Southeast Asia for so long.
Well, I was in New York about a year ago, and the thing that got to me was, I can't remember which shop it was in. I was on Fifth Avenue, and it was Prada or something like that. It was a fancy brand, and they had people working there who spoke Mandarin.
Absolutely. I think that's...
And that blew my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. They know now that this is the market that will be the big spenders, and so they really cater to this market in ways, you know, that they never have before. I mean, 70% of the luxury market now is catered to Asians.
So, Kevin, I'm gonna track back to a bit of your reading past and ask you what the first character you ever fell in love with was.
This would be a character in another book that I read.
Yes, yeah. Unless you're falling in love with your own characters, which is also quite fascinating to talk about.
You know, not as much. I would say, actually, Jay Gatsby in The Great Gatsby would be one of the first characters that I really sort of fell in love with. You know, it was one of my favorite books back in my sort of, you know, early high school days, and sort of discovering F. Scott Fitzgerald, you know, and then his books was a very profound impact for me. And so the character of Jay Gatsby, you know, this sort of very conflicted, mysterious, wealthy person that comes out of nowhere, that is also very self-destructive, you know, that really kind of appealed to my sort of rebellious teenage nature back in those days.
Oh, and of course, there are shades of Gatsby in Crazy Rich Asians as well, with people trying to invent and reinvent themselves and using money and privilege and power as this shroud of this shroud over insecurity.
Absolutely. And I think you see that over and over again with a lot of these families, a lot of these people, a lot of the characters I write about. You know, they are creatures of their own invention. You know, you see a lot of times these families where the wealth was created by the first generation, you know, by like grandpa or grandma. And then the next generation, you know, completely reinvents themselves. They want to glamorize the money. You know, say the money was first made in, I don't know, factories that made clothing. You know, the next generation wants to start hotels and, you know, glamorous spa resorts, things like that. So even in these families, there is this need to reinvent and a need to move up the social ladder.
So when Crazy Rich Asians first hit the shelves and it became this overnight sensation, it kind of came out of nowhere. So I got to ask you, what was that first point when you went, this is a story I need to tell, I need to sit down and write this story?
You know, for me, it came from a very personal place. You know, having spent my childhood in Singapore and grown up in that culture, I sort of really left it behind when I first moved to America you know, the first 20 years of my life was really about assimilating into American culture. And, you know, I moved to New York. I went to art school. I had a whole other career as a creative consultant. And I never wanted to do anything that was even mildly related to Asia. But then my father got ill. This was back in 2009. And I took time off work, and I spent a lot of time with him, you know, as he was going through treatments and being.
And he was back in Singapore?
Yeah, actually he was in Houston, getting treatment there at a very famous hospital there. And we spent a lot of time together, you know, just me and him. And I was able to really sort of discuss my childhood and really his childhood, you know, a lot more, because he grew up in Singapore at a very interesting time. You know, he remembered World War II and the Japanese invasions and you know, the Japanese occupation of Singapore. So I wanted to know more and more about that. And that sort of reconnected me to the past and my family's own history. And in many ways, that was the original motivation for me to want to begin writing. You know, I wanted to begin writing about family in Asia. And that was the original motivation.
What was the first piece of real good advice that someone told you when you said, hey, I want to write a book?
The advice actually came a long time before I began writing this book. Because when I first wrote this book, I told absolutely no one. I wrote it in secret. You know, I wrote it in between other work projects. But I actually went to, I was in the creative writing program at the University of Houston many, many years ago when I first got my first bachelor's degree. And what I always remember was what my creative writing teacher would say. He said, write from your truth. Tell the truth. Find that place of authenticity that's in your story and begin from there. And I feel that, you know, that was something I really had to do in order to get, you know, the results I did. I had to write this crazy story, which I wondered, you know, will anyone believe this? Is this too crazy? Is this too sensational? Does anyone care? You know, but I'm going to write it anyway. I'm going to tell my truth.
And of course, it helps that the truth is so absurd in this case.
Exactly.
I think this side of Singaporean life and that intersection between Hong Kong life and the rich and the famous and all of that is not necessarily told too much in Singapore literature. I read a lot of local fiction from Singapore, and it's not explored in great detail, at least not in the same soapy manner in which you do it. I think that's quite fascinating that more Singaporeans don't do it, and maybe it requires a certain amount of extraction from that society, that 20 years that you spent trying to integrate with another society. You need those eyes before you can get into it, like properly into it.
I think that's a really good point. In many ways, I left Singapore, and so I'm really an outsider to the culture now. But I had to leave, and I had to become an outsider in order to be able to see it and to remember it the way I did. You know, I think, first of all, if I'd stayed in Singapore, I would never be a writer. I'd probably be a lawyer, you know, or a banker at this point. And I would never have discovered this part of my personality.
Yes, you would, my friend. You'd be a lawyer, a doctor, or an accountant.
Exactly. One of the three. Yeah. So I think leaving and having this very outsider perspective has given me the freedom to just write that. You know, I think if I stayed in Singapore, there would be too much probably family pressure, social pressure to not do something this crazy.
Talk to me about the first character you wrote in Crazy Rich Asians, the first character you conceptualized. And was that character the anchor for the novel?
In many ways, yes. The first character I wrote about was Eleanor Young, who is, you know, Nicholas Young, the hero's mother, the sort of very, very conniving.
Oh, those are the best.
Sort of, you know, villainous at first mother, you know, who's sort of hell-bent on making sure her son does not marry this woman that she doesn't know, you know. And so that was really the first character I wrote. I mean, it's really, I think it's chapter 3 of my book when you first meet her. And that was actually the first chapter I attempted where you first meet Eleanor Young when she goes over to her friend's house for what they call Bible study, you know. But Bible study is actually an excuse for them to gossip and brag about each other and just spend time eating and showing off their new jewelry and handbags and things like that, you know. So that was really the first chapter that I wrote. And bringing her to life and bringing her friends to life, you know, all the aunties that are still very much a part of my life, those voices, I think, really helped me to inform the novel and say, you know what, I think I have something here that's quite original and worth exploring. To me, it was funny to write that chapter, you know, these women reacting to the news of a gossip about Elena's son, you know, having a new girlfriend was the spark that started the whole story and got the whole ball rolling, so to speak.
Well, it's original, but also it's universal, because it doesn't matter if you are a Chinese matriarch or an Indian matriarch or a Jewish matriarch. Those characters seem to exist across the board.
They really do. And that's what I've heard across the board from readers around the world. You know, I get letters, and of course, I've gone on lots of tours and met readers from all over the world, and, you know, from people from Pakistan to people from Israel, to people from South America. They all say, you know, we're not rich, we're not Asian, but boy, you've described my family right here. You know, I have a cousin that's just like Eddie, or I have an uncle that's just like this character, things like that. So that's really kind of, you know, brought me a lot of amusement to just sort of see how universal the story is. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I think families are all alike. We're all part of this one same family, I think.
All right, I'm going to ask you to dig deep and go to a dark place, Kevin, but talk to me about the first piece of negative feedback you got for the book.
The first piece of, you know, I really have to say that in many ways, Crazy Rich Asians has been so blessed. There really has not been a negative review that I know of, you know, in terms of a published critical review from, you know, from a journalist or something. I've never...
Yeah, I'm not talking about the trolls.
I've really never encountered a negative one. I think initially there were some people that were, you know, on Amazon or different websites that were shocked by the name of the title, and they immediately thought it was a racist piece of writing, you know, not knowing a thing about it. I remember, like, one of the first reviews I saw when the book first went up on Amazon was like, "You racist pig, how dare you make fun of Chinese people?" And I was like, this person has got it all wrong. But really, there has, I don't know of a negative review.
And what do you do about situations like that? I mean, how difficult is it not to engage with the person who hasn't read the book, but through the glory of the internet, believes that it's his absolute right to express this random opinion? Have you learned to switch off?
I actually don't read those reviews anymore. Yeah, I think after the first month of my book actually being published, I stopped reading reader reviews. And my editor told me, you know, to stop reading. She says it becomes, it's really interesting because you see that people that criticize your book aren't really criticizing the writing or the subject matter. It's really a personal thing.
It is. They have this visceral knee-jerk reaction. Yes.
Yeah. And especially, you know, when it comes to discussions of money and wealth, people have very extreme views of wealth, whether they're for it or against it, or they think there's too much wealth inequality. You know, people want to express themselves in that way. And it's so detached from what the story actually is. And I'm, you know, as a writer, I'm always open to, you know, criticism. Like, please tell me if this chapter wasn't working, or this character doesn't feel as authentic, or something like that. I want to know, because I want to be better, and I want to create books that readers want to keep reading, you know? So I'm not touchy or sensitive about it at all. Like, I'm not trying to write a masterpiece here by any means, you know? But the ones that have viewed it online, I'm talking about, that have been negative, it's never about the book itself or never about the writing. It's always there's some personal angle, or they have a gripe with Singapore or something like that, you know? And so I've stopped reading those reviews a long, long time ago.
Hey, as far as I know, the book sells pretty well in Malaysia. And, you know, we've got historical gripes with Singapore, so that's okay.
Oh, well, I'm so glad to hear. You know, I get letters from fans in Malaysia as well. And it's always so nice to hear from Malaysia because, you know, I've...
Because we're the same.
Yeah, And I spent so much time there in my childhood and have so many fond memories of Malaysia. So it's great that I'm also connecting with Malaysian readers.
You know, the timing for this book was absolutely perfect because it seemed like the publishers were waiting for something like this for that Western market. So did you get many rejections when you sent it in, or was it almost immediately beloved by publishers and editors and agents?
I was very lucky. You know, it was immediately embraced. And, you know, my agent actually sent it out to, I think, 16 different publishers in New York. And I think out of the 16, there were about 9 that were very interested from the very beginning. So it really did happen at the perfect time. I don't know if this book would have been published even 10 years ago. I don't think the Western audience would have been ready at that point. But as I told you, you know, over the last 5-6 years, we started seeing so much more interest in things from Asia because, you know, as the economy boomed, as more and more Asians started sort of flaunting their wealth, as you started reading more about, you know, the different political scandals involving sort of all the Beijing politicians and their children and all the money, things like that, those stories were coming to us here, and you would see them in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. So people were curious. And so it was sort of the perfect moment to sort of unveil a book like this.
So one last question, Kevin. Describe to me the feeling the first time you got that call saying, hey, they want to make this into a movie.
It was very surreal. And it happened actually before the book was even published. You know, my book came out in late May 2013, I think that was the date, right? And might be getting it wrong, but a month before the book actually hit the bookstores, the movie studios had already heard about it and were already interested. And the, you know, producers were already calling up my agent about this book. And it was very, very exciting and also just kind of unbelievable, you know, at that point. Because it sort of exceeded my wildest dreams that anyone would even want to, first of all, wanted to even publish the book, but then to have Hollywood interested and you know, major producers interested in the material was just sort of, you know, the icing on the cake.
Also, we don't see many Chinese faces in mainstream Hollywood movies. You ask anyone and they can only ever name the Joy Luck Club.
Exactly. And the Joy Luck Club was more than 20 years ago.
That's
so
right.
It's about time, and, you know, we have an amazing production team now and an amazing director, you know, John M. Chu. And we're hopefully going to make, you know, really kind of an all-star Asian cast movie, you know, with the top actors from all over Asia and Asian Americans as well.
And you know what? Ming-Na Wen still looks exactly the same.
She does. Most Asian actresses look exactly the same. You know, it's sort of an amazing blessing, I think, you know, for a lot of Asian women. They just look the same for like 40 years. Love her.
There are paintings in ceilings all over the world just getting older.
Exactly.
Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. It's been fantastic.
It was so fun. Thank you so much, Uma.
That was Kevin Kwan. You can find both Crazy Rich Asians and China Rich Girlfriend at all good bookstores. You've been listening to Authored. This is Bookmark, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.